It is the 4th of September 2009. I'm here in Abuja, Nigeria. My name is Tumi Makgetla, and I'm here with Professor Dora Akunyili, the Minister of the Federal Ministry of Information and Communication from December 2008. And before that, for nearly 8 years, she was the Director General of the National Agency for Food and Drug Administration and Control. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for coming.
Well, can we then begin with your giving us a brief overview of your career and how you came to be engaged in reforms at NAFDAC?
How I came to be here or how I came to be in NAFDAC?
How you came to be in NAFDAC.
Okay. Thank you very much. I was the Zonal Secretary of Petroleum Special Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. It's a trust fund that is giving percentage of Nigeria's oil revenue money to be used in providing infrastructural facilities for the entire country. Mm-hmm. I was in charge of the Southeast. And I had a strange ailment. I was asked to go to Britain for treatment. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to have surgery. There mm-hmm. was a wrong diagnosis here in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I went with £17,000, £12,000 for surgery, mm-hmm. £5,000 for treatment, tests, and others. And in the end, it was found that I did not need surgery, so I asked the hospital to give me the £12,000, which I had already paid. Mm-hmm. They were surprised that I wanted to return the money to my employers. So when I returned the money to General Buhari, who was the former Nigeria's head of state, chief executive of PTF, mm-hmm. He said, he wrote on the letter, I did not know that there are still some Nigerians with integrity. Mm-hmm. And he said I should return the money to the minister, to the finance man. I did. Mm-hmm. And just before PTF wound up, Obasanjo's president, former president Obasanjo's friend, mm-hmm. came to visit his king's man, mm-hmm. who was my friend. And when he visited General Buhari, before coming to see the king's man, he was told about how I returned £12,000. So when I went to the man's office, you know, and a middle-aged man said, my friend said, Daddy, this is the lady that returned the money. And he said, yes, I'm just coming from General Buhari's office. Mm-hmm. You returned £12,000. Why did you return it? Mm-hmm. For me, it was not a big deal. I said, I returned it because it's not my money. I cannot take money that is not my own. Even though people felt I should not return it, but I felt strongly to return it, I returned it. Mm-hmm. He said, are you a pharmacist? I said, yes. He said, what happened? Well, I told him the story. And he said, my friend is looking for somebody to sanitize NAFDAC. Mm-hmm. NAFDAC was not a big name. I heard about it vaguely, but it's not a place I would apply to work mm-hmm. because it was not a popular place. And I just said, oh, really? He said, yes, I want your CV. And I said, I don't have my CV here. He said, go and type it. Mm-hmm. I went and typed what I could remember mm-hmm. and gave him. 2 weeks after, on a Sunday afternoon, I got a phone call. I said, my name is Obasanjo. I was in shock about 3 weeks or 4 weeks after, mm-hmm. some weeks after. And I thought it was scam, mm-hmm. you know. But when he repeated another word, mm-hmm. I said, this is the voice I hear on televisions, television and radios. So I said, I didn't know what I muttered because mm-hmm. I was confused. Well, we agreed I would see him on Tuesday. So on Tuesday, I came to Abuja to see him, and he was very nice, asked me about the £2,000, asked me a few questions about, counterfeit drugs in the system. Mm-hmm. And I was just myself, and he made up his mind to give me the job. Mm-hmm. Thereafter, there was a lot of fight from the political class mm-hmm. because they didn't want him to give me the job. They had their reasons, which mm-hmm. sounded very cogent. Mm-hmm. Because the Minister of Health was Igbo, mm-hmm. I am Igbo, mm-hmm. and most of the drug counterfeiters are Igbos. And mm-hmm. remember that I'm also a woman, so mm-hmm. gender was also an issue. But he stood his grounds and said, no, this is the woman that will do the job. And that was part of the driving forces, you know, behind me when I was working in NAFDAC. Mm-hmm. That confidence in me, somebody he never knew, just mm-hmm. heard some reports about me. So even the Minister of Health then, who handed over to another Igbo man, mm-hmm. Was against my appointment. Mm-hmm. So I came to the place, and I've never been into regulation. I mm-hmm. came from the university, just that I was a pharmacist. Regulation is not taught in any pharmacy school. Mm-hmm. But I was keen to succeed. I was desperate mm-hmm. to succeed. Mm-hmm. I therefore hit the ground running right mm-hmm. from the first day. And by the grace of God, by the time I left, the counterfeiters were on the run. Mm-hmm. So much so that they even started running to other West African countries. And uh-huh. I pursued them to those places. Because they were leaving Nigeria and going to establish there, I put in place, I called other West African food and drug regulators mm-hmm. and put in place WADRAN, West African Drug Regulatory Authorities Agency, as a platform for mm-hmm. interacting with by our brothers and sisters in the sub-region so as to make the environment hostile for them in other countries so that they mm-hmm. would not find a place to regroup and reinvade us, because drug counterfeiting was actually an invasion.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to those first days where you mm-hmm. describe yourself hitting the ground running. What were the key challenges that were priorities for you when you came into that position as Director General?
The most serious challenge was corruption and conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Before I came into NAFDAC, the counterfeiters were paying their way to bring in whatever they wanted to bring in. And I came in and said, no, it would not happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they were angry. They threatened me with phone calls. They threatened my husband. Mm-hmm. They nearly kidnapped my son. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. When they got very desperate, mm-hmm. they even shot me. Oh. A bullet grazed my scalp, mm-hmm. shattered my headscarf. It was a miracle that I survived. And they vandalized NAFDAC facilities, burnt NAFDAC offices across the country
mm-hmm.
in a space of five or six days.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the highest challenge. Corruption, conflict of interest, threat to life and property mm-hmm. of NAFDAC officials and our facilities. For the fact that most drug counterfeiters come from my place
mm-hmm.
was also a very big issue.
Okay.
Because at a stage they carried that propaganda that I was fighting my people.
Mm-hmm.
But I was convinced that it was not a matter of tribe
mm-hmm.
or religion
mm-hmm.
or my people. It was mm-hmm. a matter of telling people, stopping people from circulating poison
mm-hmm.
in the system.
Mm-hmm.
We also had that challenge of very poor laws. The laws were very non-deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
The verdict in courts, what do you call it now? When people were convicted,
mm-hmm.
the penalty was between 10,000 naira and 500,000 naira,
mm-hmm.
or 3 months to 5 years imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that 500,000 naira to a major drug counterfeiter is like $1 to you and I,
mm-hmm.
to you and me. And consequently, they were able to go to court, get the best lawyers, and drag some cases for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were in court with some drug counterfeiters from 1996
mm-hmm.
till date. Those wow. cases are still in court.
Mm-hmm.
The people that shot me in 2003, the case is still in court.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that the people that shot me were identified, five of them were killed,
mm-hmm.
one survived,
mm-hmm.
and he's still around as a star witness. So, but the case is still in court.
Mm-hmm.
And non-deterrent laws. Then another serious challenge is sophistication in drug manufacture,
mm-hmm.
clandestine drug manufacture, such that it is almost difficult
mm-hmm.
to tell the difference between counterfeit and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Because these counterfeiters actually spend all their technology is in making sure that the copy is perfect,
mm-hmm.
even though the drug may not contain anything.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a serious challenge with non-cooperation among government agencies
mm-hmm.
in the ports.
Mm-hmm.
We had that problem of NAFDAC struggling to make sure that we do the right thing and others actually working against us.
Mm-hmm.
And It was tough, but you see, when you start succeeding in a fight,
mm-hmm.
the burden becomes less.
Mm-hmm.
It was very tough when we started, but success came very fast.
Okay.
Because criminals are cowards.
Mm-hmm.
As long as a regulator does not get compromised, the criminal will eventually be on the run. And when the criminal starts running, they will never stop running because they know they are doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that for over 30 years, because nobody challenged them, they became like little gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it was even a shock to them that I came into that position and and gave them a fight for their money.
Okay.
So we had other challenges, but these were the major ones.
Great. What would you identify as the most important changes that you were able to effect during your time at the agency?
Ooh. First of all, there was awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because we created so much awareness that even in the villages,
mm-hmm.
people have to, right now, they call people that went to school. You know, they call people that are literate
okay.
to read labels for them
yeah.
before they buy any drug or take any drug
mm-hmm.
or any food or whatever, consumable. Because they know the necessity of making sure that it has NAFDAC number,
mm-hmm.
that is a number that authenticates that this is certified by NAFDAC.
Mm-hmm.
They ask people, check NAFDAC number, check expiry date.
Mm-hmm.
And people now, the awareness is actually part of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because these criminals succeeded for over 30 years, partly because of lack of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So they went on their business unhindered. People were not checking.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, when I came into office at the DG of NAFDAC, we had about 70% of drugs in circulation as fake mm-hmm. and counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, people were dying. We had lots of treatment failures,
mm-hmm.
Resistant to antibiotics and anti-malarias. And as people were dying, legitimate businesses were collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
Multinationals left this country out of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Boehringer, Merck, even Pfizer, Lilly,
mm-hmm.
and many of them left because there was an uneven playing ground.
Mm-hmm.
How can you be competing with somebody who is compressing chalk
mm-hmm.
or drug with little active
mm-hmm.
or drug actually expired and relabeled and so on and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
Or people that are just paying for packaging. So, but by the time we gave them a fight for 1, 2, 3 years,
mm-hmm.
by the third year, we are actually consolidating
mm-hmm.
because they already saw that the game was up. The level of incidence of fake drugs came down to 16.7%
mm-hmm.
Through a study conducted, as shown by a study conducted by WHO DFID.
Mm-hmm.
And people were dying less. Our doctors were happy in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And the general atmosphere changed.
Mm-hmm.
The counterfeiters were no longer moving in a convoy of cars. It was as bad as that.
Wow.
In the late 90s, Chief Marcel Nnakwe and his son, the greatest drug counterfeiter in this country,
mm-hmm.
used to move around at Onitsha with a convoy of cars and policemen.
Mm-hmm.
Impunity, that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
But by 2003, they could no longer even come out. They were hiding. As level of incidence of fake drug came down, less people were dying. The medical officers became happy.
Mm-hmm.
Our drug industry started getting revived. We had 70 drug manufacturing outfits,
mm-hmm.
But that rose to 150 by 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were expanding very fast because by 2001, they were all about to close. Even the 70 that were in existence,
mm-hmm.
we are near closure. But by 2006, as I said, we have 150,
right.
and they were all very vibrant. And as we were, and most multinationals that left Nigeria out of frustration started coming back.
Okay.
And our drugs started being accepted
mm-hmm.
in other West African countries. Our drugs that were banned by 2001, made in Nigeria drugs were banned across Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the multinationals that left Nigeria out of frustration started coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And as we are working in the area of drug, we are also aggressively working in the area of food.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, Nigeria became the first developing country to achieve universal salt iodization.
Mm-hmm.
And this iodization is critical to child survival.
Mm-hmm.
We also worked in the area of fortification of food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cosmetics,
mm-hmm.
Fluoridization of toothpaste and all. Food, cosmetics received equal attention,
mm-hmm.
but people were more interested in listening to what was done in the area of drug.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back, I feel real comfortable about how far we were able to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I pray that with the strong, formidable structures,
mm-hmm.
as the present DG always says, that that we have formidable structures on ground,
mm-hmm.
that those formidable structures will continue to make NAFDAC function mm-hmm. effectively such that these criminals would not dream of coming back. Mm-hmm. And so that even that 16.7% should come down. Because by the time I left NAFDAC, the 16.7% was the figure of 2006. Mm-hmm. Our own assessment was less than 10%. Mm-hmm. About 9-10%. Mm-hmm. But we didn't publish it. It was preliminary study. Mm-hmm. I always said that we would publish when WHO mm-hmm. with any other international agency studies and gives us the figure. Mm-hmm. So our own assessment was less than 10% by last year. Mm-hmm. So, and I pray that it continues to go down, because even 9% or 10 or 2% or 1% is still unacceptable, because mm-hmm. we are talking about life. Mm-hmm. But remember that this drug counterfeiting is not just a Nigerian issue, of course, because even in the U.S. it's becoming a very big problem. Mm-hmm. I've always been interacting and coordinating activities with U.S. FDA mm-hmm. since 2001.
Okay. Well, you know, talking about working with other actors to advance your reforms, how did you build public support for these efforts? And who did you see as key individuals or institutions or other actors that you could turn to build support for these initiatives?
Yeah, we were able to build support for NAFDAC, public and government support, because of our sincerity of purpose mm-hmm. and honesty mm-hmm. and fair-handedness, level-handedness in dealing with everybody. Mm-hmm. You see, when you work, people watch. Mm-hmm. If they trust you, especially Nigerians, mm-hmm. they follow you mm-hmm. and support you. The support of the people went side by side with support of government. Government also saw that we were doing very well mm-hmm. and started giving us particular attention. Okay. Even the president would not say much in functions mm-hmm. without talking about NAFDAC. Mm-hmm. That was more than money, because it means that even the head of Nigeria, the president of Nigeria, appreciated what we are doing, and that energized us a lot. Mm-hmm. So that public support, as I said, was built through establishing trust okay. and confidence, mm-hmm. both from the people and from government. Mm-hmm. And it continued to widen, because as years went by, mm-hmm. it was clear to everybody that our activities were not like a fluke, okay. that it was genuine. And they were seeing results. Mm-hmm. Less people were dying in hospitals. Doctors were speaking up. Pharmacists and drug manufacturers were rejoicing mm-hmm. and announcing their profits in newspapers. And everybody keeps singing thanks to NAFDAC. Mm-hmm. So these all contributed in building public confidence. To some point, people were praying for me mm-hmm. in both churches and mosques, mm-hmm. even though I'm not a Muslim. Mm-hmm. So whenever I heard that in a mosque I was being prayed for, mm-hmm. it really lifted my spirit. Mm-hmm. And other NAFDAC officers also felt good about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have structures such that everybody in NAFDAC knows what happens when a drug is submitted for registration. Step mm-hmm. one, step two, step three. What happens when you detect that a drug in a shop is fake? Mm-hmm. Step one, step two, step three, to the step of closing down the shop. Mm-hmm. So these standard operating procedures and operational guidelines mm-hmm. helped us a lot, okay. together with public support and, very importantly, our strong will mm-hmm. never to be compromised. Mm-hmm. Because that is number one rule for a regulator to succeed. Mm-hmm. Once a regulator gets his or her hands soiled, regulation is finished. Mm-hmm. Because the people you are regulating will become your masters. Mm. But as long as you are not compromised, you will remain their master, and they will remain afraid of you, mm-hmm. such that they can never do anything brazenly or with impunity.
Mm-hmm. Great. You've discussed the resistance that the agency faced in trying to implement its mandate. How did you deal with the resistance? How did you address that challenge, and what difficulties arose?
When they were threatening me, I tried to deal with it by not always talking about it. Mm-hmm. And when they nearly kidnapped my son, they went to school and called him out. Mm-hmm. Telling him that an uncle of his was looking for him. When my son came out, two men grabbed his two hands. And impulsively, he said, "Dr. Mrs. Akonyi is not my mom, she's my aunt." Mm. And she swore by it, and they left him. Oh. We had to send him to America to join his other siblings mm-hmm. because I won the American Visa Lottery in 1996, and that mm-hmm. actually, you know, made my children get entitled to green card. Mm-hmm. So with my son out of the way, it remains just myself and my husband. Mm-hmm. My husband had his own security given to him by government, mm-hmm. and I had 8 to 9 policemen staying with me morning to night yeah. until I sleep. Mm-hmm. And I had 4, but after being shot, I now had it increased to about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. They were always with me, but more importantly, I have a very firm believer of God that mm-hmm. The people who are guiding me would guard in vain if mm-hmm. my God is not there. After all, didn't I have policemen the day that I was shot? And again, President Obasanjo ordered that all our facilities should be beefed up with security guards mm-hmm. after the vandalization of the lab and the burning of our facilities. But the way I handled that burning, because the burning of our facilities actually pained me more than the shooting. Mm-hmm. Because after the shooting, I survived it. It was like they had done their worst. Mm-hmm. But during the burning, it's like so they are not yet relenting. And I came on a Monday morning, on a Sunday night, it was on TV that NAFDAC was burning. Mm-hmm. When I came there, I looked at the place. The smoke was all over the air. The fire was coming down. Mm-hmm. And I came out of the car, looked at it, and I just decided to say nothing because I didn't want to start crying. Mm-hmm. You know, that wouldn't be too good for me. Mm-hmm. I went back to my house and sent for all the staff. Mm-hmm. When they came to my house, I told them that we are not going to show these people that we are distressed mm-hmm. because this is becoming a psychological warfare, and that I was going to see the president that day so that we can find a place to fix whatever so that we could start working immediately. I flew to Abuja, saw the president who gave me free access. He was part of instrumental to our success. Because mm-hmm. I had free access. He called the Minister of Housing, gave us a land in Ikoyi. I flew back to Lagos the same day, mm-hmm. called the staff that I could see late in the evening, and I told them I would get some money mm-hmm. for us to get canopies, and buy some chairs from mm-hmm. the streets so that we could stay there and work. Okay. By the next day, we were putting canopies and buying chairs, and people were amazed
yeah.
because I felt that we needed to pretend that we were not shaking, mm-hmm. that we were not that we could still go on, mm-hmm. and we started. And what actually happened that time? One of my staff members got beaten by an insect because we were sitting on a chair on the grass, mm-hmm. and that insect formed maggots on mm-hmm. her leg. Mm-hmm. Very bad insect. That was when it struck me that it was getting too dangerous. Mm-hmm. Then we quickly bought porta cabins and mm-hmm. moved into porta cabins mm-hmm. before we moved to the laboratory and so on. But something struck me. I called the director of enforcement that Monday before I left for Abuja. I said, "Director, we are supposed to go on raid to a particular place. We must still go to that place." He didn't say anything. I said, "I am talking to you." He didn't say anything. I said, "We must go on raid today. Mm-hmm. Forget about the fire because they want to break us psychologically too." Mm-hmm. He said, the smell of the smoke is still in the air." That was his response. Then it dawned on me that some of my staff were too down-spirited for me to continue driving them. That was just before I left and went to Abuja. So we continued to manage as if nothing happened. 3 days after the Lagos fire, or 2 days after, mm-hmm. early in the morning, I got a call. My husband said, "Well, what I'm telling you, even if they burn NAFDAC in the 36 states, mm-hmm. you will not kill yourself." I said, what kind of story is this? Mm-hmm. 6 a.m., you're telling me they burn NAFDAC. I said, "Well, what will you do if you hear that Kaduna has been raised down, your lab?" I say, "How? What type of joke is that?" I say, "Well, they have burnt that place down." Wow. I said, "When?" He said, "At night." Mm. That is, I got hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I sent people to go to Kaduna. I did not go because I felt it was beginning to affect my health. Mm-hmm. So I told people to go. The next day, they went to Maiduguri. Mm-hmm. The next day, they went to Benin and burnt an office adjacent to our office as a mistaken identity. Mm-hmm. In Maiduguri, by then, President Obasanjo had ordered more policemen to be sent. Mm-hmm. And they did not succeed. They were chased out. So it was hard, but when I look back again, what is important is that I'm alive to tell this story. Mm-hmm. Because at a stage, I kept feeling and I kept discussing with my children, what if I die in this job? Mm-hmm. And my children would said, Mommy, we've been telling you to leave this job. Because my children actually insisted I would leave after my first tenure. Mm-hmm. And when we were having a meeting, 4 years anniversary in Lagos, my husband came to for the celebration and he got up to talk. We didn't discuss he was going to say that. It came from his heart. Mm-hmm. He said, that this job by next year, by the grace of God, that my wife will conclude the first tenure and she's not going for a second tenure. Mm-hmm. So people got crazy about it, angry. Mm-hmm. And I needed to support my husband who has said something, that kind of thing in public. We had individuals, organizations going to my husband, coming to me, pleading that I should reconsider it. And the one that actually touched me the most was that the president invited my husband. Mm-hmm. And I went with him and he sort of encouraged me, encouraged him to encourage me. Okay. So we decided that I would stay on for the second tenor. But even for that second tenor, normally after the first tenor, you apply that your tenor has ended. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, I didn't apply. Mm-hmm. I didn't write anything. Until in council meeting, the council members of NAFDAC now said, no, you must renew your tenure.
Yeah.
Because legally, you are actually here for 2 years, without almost 2 years, without renewal. Mm-hmm. So I now wrote a letter and renewed it. Mm-hmm. Then
this is my last question. As Director General,
They should wait.
As Director General, you had to bring together a team to work with you in the office. Mm-hmm. How did you go about identifying and attracting people with the necessary skills to support your reform efforts?
I knew some people before I came to NAFDAC. I knew some people at Enugu, some pharmacists. Mm-hmm. I knew their capability. I invited them. They came. I invited my special assistant that worked with me when I was in the local government, he came. Mm-hmm. I invited pharmacists that I knew earlier and non-pharmacists that I also knew about their credibility and competence. And they came and we worked together until I left.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, this program is designed to help leaders share their experiences and innovations to address challenges that arise in building new states and institutions. Is there anything that we've missed or which you would like to add?
Well, what I want to say actually is that an institution assumes the character of leadership. Responsible and honest leadership is critical to the survival of any establishment or institution. Mm-hmm. Or an institution assumes the character and the character of the leader. If the leader is honest, people are bound to follow suit most of the time. But once the leader is dishonest, the system gets destroyed. Because if as a director general, I ever got compromised, all the others along the line would go on to be compromised. Mm-hmm. Or if I allow them to get compromised on my behalf, then that will just be impunity because it's like the support is from the top. So I like what you are doing because actually African leaders need to be sensitized to know that leadership is critical to the survival of this continent. Because without purposeful and honest leadership, Africa will continue to grope in darkness, and corruption will continue to eat us like cankerworm, such that our God-given natural resources may never really take us to where we are supposed to be.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.